From Montreal, Quebec, this is the Bard Brawl.
I don't want to see it. Welcome, Bard Brawlers, to the Bard Brawl. My name is Daniel J. Rowe. Stephanie E. McCullman, Bard Brawler, lost a ruby in the forest outside of a town in Ontario called...
Centerville.
If you find it, it's from her ring that her dad found in the forest. So please return it. Go to bardbrawl.com and leave us a comment or email us at bardbrawl@gmail.com. Oh, by the way, Bard Brawlers, there is a ruby now in the forest. So if you are a treasure hunter, there you go. I just gave you something to hunt for.
Some treasure.
This is a speechless podcast. Woo! That means Eric Jean is sitting across from me, as he generally does in the speechless podcast, for 12th night. We thank all Bard Brawlers who... Oh, hi, Eric, how are you doing?
Hey, not too bad, you?
Good, I'm okay. It's holiday weekend. We're recording this on a holiday weekend.
Happy Canada Day, Confederation Day.
Whatever.
Moving Day.
Day off.
Quebec Oppression Day. Franco Oppression Day, whatever you
First
want to call it.
First Nations Oppression Day. Mm-hmm. Let's add that.
We all get to have the day off.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you, Bard Brawlers, who listened to all five acts of Twelfth Night. It was a very enjoyable day. Eric Jean, we were just talking before how following King Lear with Twelfth Night was really special, how we enjoyed both of them. Going from, what was it like for you, going from an intense, intense tragedy, very heavy, to some, probably one of the lightest plays, funnest plays that he writes?
I would say welcome change of pace. I love King Lear. King Lear is one of my favorite plays. It's always in my top three Shakespeare plays when people ask me what I like. But it's a heavy play. It's a hard play to share the experience of reading because it's so heavy. It's so it tries to explore so many dark things and it's so tragic that it's hard to, even though it was fun to read, it's hard to have fun reading it sometimes.
Yeah.
I guess maybe if I could say. Whereas Twelfth Night,
quite the opposite,
as anybody who's listened to the podcast will know, fueled by a Jay Reed, Sir Toby,
Jay Reed going from, he was reading Edmund and Cornwall, two of the nastiest characters, to probably, I can't think of a whole lot more fun characters than Sir Toby Belch. And also, Zoe Baldwin went from reading, I know she was Cordelia.
She was Edgar, I believe.
And Edgar.
Oh, no, were you Edgar?
No, she was Edgar.
She was Edgar, yeah.
Tom's the Cold.
To
reading Malvolio and Viola, or was it Viola? Was she?
Yes. But it's funny because she was reading the mad, crazy, madcap role in King Lear, and then she was reading Malvolio, the serious role in Twelfth Night.
Both of them awesome.
Both kind of
stole the show. I did very little in this one, by the way.
I read a lot of stage directions.
Sebastian came in about act five.
I was the Duke.
But as you will see, there are some speeches in this play. The speeches podcast, like with Taming of the Shrew, we're kind of looking at it. There are scenes that you just have to listen to the whole scene.
Yeah.
So you go to bardbrawl.com and click on Twelfth Night, you'll see you can break it up by act, or you can download it on iTunes, and just enjoy the whole play. But we will take a few speeches that we chose.
Yeah.
First off, as the ending of Shakespeare in Love told us, this is a shipwreck play, a New World play. Our next play, actually, we do, is also going to deal with that.
It's going to be awesome.
It'll be very fun. But so the first speech sort of informs a bit of what you're going to see in the play. It's early.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what it is, Eric?
Well, in the first speech, we have Viola, who's washed up, who's a Gwyneth Paltrow, who has washed up on shore, speaking to a captain who has yet to be cast. But speaking to the captain, she realizes she's washed up in a strange land, and that as a young, eligible, single woman, she is potentially in danger. And so she decides that she is going to dress herself up as a young man, or she says a eunuch, but, you know, let's say like a boy of about 14 or 15, and is going to try to become a courtier, I guess, or a page for Duke Orsino, the Lord, the Duke of Illyria.
Right, and this talks, this is, instantly establishes the role reversal,
yeah,
kind of Tom fun that's going to happen throughout,
yeah,
the play.
Yeah, and it also, it's almost like a little bit of a meta moment, because there's a few times in the play, and this is the first time where she does it, where Olivia just says, well, I'm going to do this thing, and just then just let time run its course, and time will sort it out, which again, like Shakespeare in Love, it's, you know, it all works out in the end. How do we know how? We don't know. It's a mystery, but she seems to believe that somehow this will sort itself out.
Oh, that I served that lady and might not be delivered to the world till I had made mine own occasion mellow what my estate is.
That were hard to compass, because she will admit no kind of suit. No, not the Duke's.
There is a fair behavior in thee, Captain, and though that nature with a beauteous wall doth oft close in pollution, yet of thee I will believe thou hast a mind that suits with this thy fair and outward character. I prithee, and I'll pay thee bounteously, conceal me what I am, and be my aid for such disguise as haply shall become the form of my intent. I'll serve this Duke. Thou shalt present me as an eunuch to him. It may be worth thy pains, for I can sing and speak to him in many sorts of music that will allow me very worth his service. What else mayhap to time I will commit, only shape thou thy silence to my wit.
Be you his eunuch, and your mute I'll be. When my tongue blabs, then let mine eyes not see.
So that was Zoe, and we're going to follow up. We're going to do a twofer. Mm-hmm. We're going to twofer Viola, because Viola sort of informs the first part of the play and kind of tells everybody what's happening. She has that privileged part of being in disguise, so knowing more than what everybody else knows.
She's one of the characters that moves between the two courts, right? Because you have Olivia's court, where you have Sir Toby and Aguecheek and Fabian and all those sort of clownish people.
Olivia is melancholy.
She is very melancholy.
Yeah.
And Orsino is kind of melancholy with love, shall we say, for Olivia, but Viola is the character that goes between these two, so as you can imagine, she says a lot, and she does a lot.
Mm-hmm. And she introduces this, I remember reading this, the setup for how are you going to resolve the fact that Olivia falls in love with a girl, because the girl is in disguise. Coincidentally, Viola also has a twin brother, who apparently looks just like her in disguise.
Yeah.
But we just run along with it.
She just sort of dressed up in his clothes.
Right? And the second speech also introduces Malvolio, which Zoe also reads.
Yeah.
So she's doing double duty here. What does Malvolio bring? He's the straight man to the goofy...
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the straight man. He gets called a Puritan, and I mean, you can read into that as much as you want. If, you know, Shakespeare liked to poke fun at some of the Puritans, but he's the guy who just doesn't get what this whole Twelfth Night business is about. He's the guy who doesn't get that it's all about jokes and having fun, and he can't switch it off, because he's like a hard-working Protestant, you know, honest Protestant, hard-working ethic kind of guy, and he just can't switch off for a few weeks.
And this speech that we're going to hear right now is Viola sort of questioning that the lady must have seen inside her. What is the deal?
Well, Olivia, Viola is trying to convince Olivia to marry Orsino, but Olivia seems to fall in love with the messenger, with Viola. So what she does is she tries to trick and test Viola by having Malvolio run after her with the ring And she tells Malvolio, pretend that Viola, that Cesario, Viola, left this behind, and see if they'll take it. And that way, hopefully, maybe he'll come back to me and deliver the ring and say, well, no, I didn't. And I can see him again and try to, you know, tell him that I want him to be with me.
And the ring symbolizes power. Right?
Well,
one ring.
To always.
And he who gets the ring becomes a slave to it.
Clearly. And Viola will bravely take that ring.
One ring to rule them all. Zoe Baldwin, once again.
Come, sir, you peevishly threw it to her, and her will is it should be so returned. If it be worth stooping for, there it lies in your eye. If not, be it his that finds it.
Exit.
I left no ring with her. What means this lady? Fortune forbid my outside have not charmed her. She made good view of me, indeed, so much that sure methought her eyes had lost her tongue, for she did speak in starts distractedly. She loves me, sure, the cunning of her passion invites me in this churlish messenger. None of my lord's ring. Why, he sent her none. I am the man, if it be so, as 'tis. Poor lady, she were better love a dream. Disguise, I see, thou art a wickedness, wherein the pregnant enemy does much. How easy is it for the proper false in women's waxen hearts to set their forms? Alas, our frailty is the cause, not we, for such as we are made of, such we be. How will this fadge? My master loves her dearly, and I, poor monster, fond as much on him. And she, mistaken, seems to dote on me. What will become of this? As I am man, my state is desperate for my master's love. As I am woman, now alas the day, what thriftless sighs shall poor Olivia breathe? O time, thou must untangle this, not I. It is too hard a knot for me to untie.
Exit. Okay, now we can't do a Twelfth Night speeches or scenes podcast. Let's call this speeches and scenes.
Yeah, speeches and scenes.
Because we cannot go any further without introducing J. Reed's tour de force as Sir Toby Belch. Is Toby Belch just a drunken fool, or does what is the point of...
Yes.
Yeah. And Sir Andrew Agginchick, let's not...
Yeah.
Well, the buffoon. Both Amrit and Andre's performance... And actually, I read him scene.
That was Malvolio in a forgettable third act that we're not going to be showcasing.
Hey. So we have a scene with the goofy side plot.
Yeah. Well, Sir Toby is kind of a bit of a clown, but he's like the king of the clowns, in a sense. And basically, he's the uncle of Olivia, so he enjoys a bit of a privileged position in the household. And because he's sort of the crazy drunk uncle, Olivia... tolerates him. But the fact is that he also represents this sort of a nobility that, despite being kind of a buffoon, still is allowed to lord it over Malvolio, who, as much as you want to make fun of him, is kind of an honest, hardworking guy who just happens to be a little too in love with his legend, I guess. But
this scene kind of encompasses Bard Brawl, a method?
Mm.
Method to the madness. A lot of people, when I bring up the fact that I have this nerdy Shakespeare club, they get this real... And I invite anybody.
Mm.
Anyone I meet is welcome to come.
As you can imagine, we have to beat them back with sticks.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's funny is that people like Jay, who didn't read a lot of Shakespeare, and Benny, we had a while ago...
Wait for the return.
Yeah. These guys... and others, a bunch of others that have come, they don't read Shakespeare, and they just sort of get into it. And it's basically, we are all Sir Toby Belch.
Mm.
Like a bunch of drunken fools just reading through this. And yes, there are the King Lears that you take a little more seriously, but in the end, it's just, it's Jay Reed singing
it's gotta be
drunkenly.
Fun. It's gotta
and
be
And that's
fun.
What was so fun about this play, and if you see it live, you'll get it right away. If a director doesn't get it, he doesn't get it, basically. Because this play is really fun, and there's a lot of, like, drunken craziness. And you'll hear throughout this next speech how they even took longer because we keep laughing because it's just so funny.
Yeah.
And they're reading it cold. Like, All of us are reading this cold.
Yeah, I can just imagine how incredibly hilarious this would be after several weeks of rehearsal and costumes and on stage, and be awesome.
Yeah, so here we go. We got a bunch of actors here. I think we've got Andre Simino, definitely Sir Andrew. We've got Sir Toby as Jay Reed. We've got Zoe in there as Malvolio. I think I'm Maria.
And I'm reading stage directions.
Everybody's in there. So, ladies and gentlemen, Sir Toby Belch. What a caterwauling do you keep here? If my lady have not called up her steward Malvolio and bid him turn you out of doors, never trust me.
My lady is a Cadian. We are politicians. Malvolio's a peg of Ramsey, and
singing.
The three merry men be we. Am I not consanguineous? Am I not of her blood? Tilly Valley, lady.
Singing.
There dwelt a man in Babylon. Lady, lady.
Beshrew me, the knight's an admirable fooling.
Aye, he does well enough if he be disposed, and so do I too. He does it with a better grace, but I do it more natural.
Sings.
Oh, the 12th day of December.
For the love of God, peace.
Enter Malvolio.
My masters, are you mad? Or what are you? Have ye no wit, manners, nor honesty, but to gabble like tinkers at this time of night? Do ye make an alehouse of my lady's house, that ye squeak out our cozier's catches without any mitigation or remorse of voice? Is there no respect of place, persons, nor time in you?
Funny side note is last time the neighbors actually said that exact same thing. The last part, probably. Yeah.
We did keep time in our catches. Snick up!
Sir Toby, I must be round with you. My lady bade me tell you that, though she harbors you as her kinsman, she's nothing allied to your disorders. If you can separate yourself and your misdemeanors, you are welcome to the house. If not, and it would please you to take leave of her, she is very willing to bid you farewell.
Sinks.
Farewell, dear heart, since I must needs be gone.
Nay, good Sir Toby.
Singing.
His eyes do show his days are almost done.
Is it even so?
Sings.
But I will never die.
Sir Toby, there you lie.
This is much credit to you.
Sings.
Shall I bid him go?
What then if you do?
Still singing.
Shall I bid him go and spare not?
Oh, no, 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 you dare not.
To the clown.
Out of tune, sir, ye lie!
To Malvolio.
Art any more than a steward? Dost thou think because thou art virtuous there shall be no more cakes and ale?
I'm not Malvolio.
Yes.
I'm pointing at him. Is he Malvolio?
Oh.
Stage direction,
really
man.
Perfect.
Yes, by Saint Anne, and ginger shall be hot in the mouth too.
There art at the right. Go, sir, rub your chain with crumbs. A stump of my what? Maria.
Okay, now I'll just come down from that. There. Of course, this is all method. He hasn't had a drop to drink. He just has just inhabited the character so much. He spends a good half hour beforehand.
I don't think we could measure what he drank in drops.
No comment.
Also, this podcast has been brought to you by
the bottles that are still in my freezer. Somebody, if you listen to that certain act, you might hear the sound of pouring.
By the way, SAQ, we are always ready to discuss terms if you would like to fund this project.
Absolutely. We have two more speeches. What are we at now? I think we're going back to...
We're going to have a look at... well, this is part of a long scene that is totally worth listening to the entire thing because it's absolutely hilarious. Malvolio finds a letter that Maria has written for him, and all of the Belch and friends are hiding in the bushes, watching as Malvolio reads this letter that's made to make him think that Olivia is in love with him, but is really just trying to get him to act ridiculously. And it's interesting because it's a funny scene, but it's mostly interesting because most people will recognize a speech in this that keeps coming back in all sorts of different ways, in different movies, different TV shows, different contexts. And most of the time, it's completely decontextualized and misses the point of what the speech is doing, like why it's in here.
Yeah, this is one of those, like, you hear it and you're like, is that where that came from? And then you're like, wow, that's really been misquoted.
Yes. Those of us who watch Star Trek will remember a certain plot line with a General Martok who Worf is encouraging to take the mantle of leadership of the Klingon High Council,
mm-hmm.
and General Martok wants to turn it away, and Worf insists it's precisely because he doesn't want the power, and that it is thrust upon him that he should accept it. And it's kind of a paraphrasing of this particular moment with a character that's the complete opposite of Malvolia.
So, an ode to misquoters. Mm. Bruce Springsteen will be proud.
Next line. M-O-A-I, this simulation is not as the former, and yet to crush this a little, it would bow to me, for every one of these letters are in my name. Soft. Here follows prose.
Reads.
If this fall into thy hand, revolve. In my stars I am above thee, but be not afraid of greatness. Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them.
Bing.
Thy fates open their eyes.
Star Trek.
Famous line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thy fates.
Taken out of context.
Yeah. Thy fates open their hands, let thy blood and spirit embrace them, and to inure thyself to what thou art like to be, cast thy humble slough and appear fresh. Be opposite with a kinsman, surly with servants, let thy tongue tang arguments of state, put thyself into the trick of singularity. She thus advises thee that sighs for thee. Remember who commended thy yellow stockings, and wish to see thee ever cross-gartered. I say remember. Go to, thou art made, if thou desirest to be so. If not, let me see thee a steward still, the fellow of servants, and not worthy to touch fortune's fingers. Farewell. She that would alter services with thee, the fortunate unhappy.
Those of you who didn't catch what the hell I was talking about when I said Bruce Springsteen will be proud, the song Born on the USA... it's well worth reading what that song is actually about.
Mm.
Ronald Reagan, well, he's dead now. It's not good to speak of those who have deceased, but you shouldn't misquote things. You should read them an entire and actually figure out what they're about.
No.
Before you do that, one last speech,
yes.
and it is mine. Oh, I was shamelessly self-serving. Shamelessly self-serving.
Steam rolls over my contribution.
I did.
To be fair,
you were Antonio and the Duke.
That was Orsino, who, other than complaining about music and stuff, is kind of a non-character in this play.
It's really weird, eh? Like, actually, the next speech, by the way, Sebastian's Soliloquy,
yeah.
This is sort of one of the more famous ones that theater students will perform when they're auditioning to get into a theater school that they don't invite you to because you totally blow it.
Mm.
Not that that happened to me. Thanks a lot, Langara College. But this is one of those soliloquies that people tend to pull out of this play because it's nice and pretty and everything.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I don't remember if I called Sebastian or... I don't even think I knew. I was just going to let everybody else choose because I was Lear last time. And Sebastian doesn't really come into the play until really the fourth act.
And even this speech, it's a nice speech, but it actually does almost next to nothing in terms of the progression of the story. It's basically just a speech about how he's, wow, is this woman nuts that she just sort of married me like that? Well, okay, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, and she clearly can't be too crazy because she can still control her household. Like, that's kind of the speech, but it doesn't really deepen anything. I mean, we all know that Olivia is not stupid. She's just mistaking him for, you know, for Cesario.
And this is sort of the surreal moment where you think in these plays, like, you suspend your disbelief because you're like, oh, well, she's dressed as a boy. No one would get... And this happens to Shakespeare all the time.
Yeah.
But then Sebastian has this speech that sort of directly criticizes the own play. Like, do you believe, like, I see the sun and everything, but do you believe this? And I kind of love it when Shakespeare kind of slides these in there, where you see that he has a conscience, at least, of the own ridiculousness of the genre.
It's kind of important, too, because, I mean, Twelfth Night, we sort of read through it, and we had a great time, blast, it was hilarious. But it does have sort of serious, or subject matter worth considering, right? And then a speech like Sebastian's speech, like you said, really captures or capitalizes on that, and says, like, how much of this are we really believing? Like, how much of this is really convincing? And, you know, ho-hum, the play's got to go, and we've got to, like, you know, get to the end of it.
It's really kind of nice for this particular podcast that we started with Viola's speech, who's the twin sister of Sebastian,
yeah,
who sort of sets up this craziness. And then we bookend it with Sebastian, who kind of just says, like, wow, what was all that about?
And Sebastian's kind of the big winner in all of this, when you think about it. He shows up, has a quick sword fight with Sir Toby and Aguecheek, gets scooped up by Olivia, and suddenly becomes, like, lord of all of her wealth. And,
yeah.
You know, like, and he's like, okay, thanks, sis.
It's a very fun play. I encourage you all. So this is Sebastian. This is Act 4, Scene 3. Enter Sebastian. Me.
Mm.
This is the air. That is the glorious sun, this pearl she gave me, I do feel it and see it, and though 'tis wonder that enwraps me thus, yet 'tis not madness. Where's Antonio, then? I could not find him at the Elephant, yet there he was, and there I found this credit, that he did range the town to seek me out. His counsel now might do me golden service, for though my soul disputes well with my sense, that this may be some error, but no madness. Yet doth this accident and flood of fortune so far exceed all instance, all discourse, that I am ready to distrust mine eyes, and wrangle with my reason that persuades me to any other trust, but that I am mad, or else the lady's mad. Yet if 'twere so, she could not sway her house, command her followers, take and give back affairs in their dispatch with such a smooth, discreet, and stable bearing as I perceive she does. There's something in it that is deceivable. But here the lady comes.
Enter Olivia and priest.
So that's Twelfth Night. Like with the comedies, we do encourage you to listen to the whole play, because the comedy plays it, the scenes tend to be where it's at.
It's also fast. It's fairly relatively
It's fast.
Short
it's a short play,
so.
But not that long is a bad thing.
No, but
everybody enjoys a nice good 3 hours sitting listening to plays on radio.
Mm. While they're doing nothing else in a dark room.
If you are that guy in the dark room listening to all 5 acts of this play, please send us a comment. Even if you just need to talk.
We're here for you.
We're here for you. Because we've all been there before. Some of the scenes in these plays, the acts in these plays are really great. Act 5 is just one scene.
Yeah.
A bunch of craziness happens, a lot of fun. We thank all of the people who acted in this, and all of the sonneteers who were excellent throughout this. Our Twitter handle is @TheBardBrawl, and our email address is bardbrawl@gmail.com. There's too many ways to contact people these days. We will be back singing and laughing and dancing with you. I cannot get Pink KOTB out of my brawlers. We will talk at you shortly. Thank you very much.
See ya.
I can't see you. I can't see us. How many times?
I really wanted to see you.
Sonnet 34. Why didst thou promise such a beauteous day, and make me travel forth without my cloak, to let base clouds o'ertake me in my way, hiding thy bravery in their rotten smoke? 'Tis not enough that through the cloud thou break to dry the rain on my storm-beaten face, for no man well of such a salve can speak that heals the wound and cures not the disgrace. Nor can thy shame give physic to my grief. Though thou repent, yet I have still the loss. The offender's sorrow lends but weak relief to him that bears the strong offense's cross. Ah, but those tears are pearl which thy love sheeds, and they are rich and ransom all ill deeds.